Caelan now commanded roughly 300,000 troops in the southern reaches of the Midlands. Under ordinary circumstances, that would be a force capable of crushing any enemy. The men streaming up from the old world had replaced the enemy losses several times over. Chagang's army was now well over 2.5 million men. It grew by the day. Chagang had been content to sit tight for the winter. Fighting in such conditions was, for the most part, impossible. He had wisely waited out the weather. When spring had come, he still sat. Apparently he was smart enough to know that warfare in spring mud was a deadly undertaking. In the muddy season you could lose your supply wagons if they got strung out. Streams became impassable floods. Losing wagons was a slow death by starvation. Cavalry were next to useless in the mud. Losses to falls in a cavalry charge cost valuable mounts, to say nothing of the men. Soldiers could make an attack, of course, but without supporting services, it was likely to be a bloodbath for no real gain. Chagang had sat out the spring mud. His minions had used the time to spread the word about Chagang the Just. Caelan was infuriated when she got reports, weeks after the fact, about envoys of peace who had shown up in various cities throughout the Midlands, giving speeches about bringing the world together for the good of all mankind. They promised peace and prosperity if they were welcomed into cities. Now, with summer finally upon them, Chagang was beginning his campaign anew. He planned his troops to now visit those cities his envoys had been to. The door burst open. It was not the wind, but Rika. The moored Sith looked like she hadn't slept in days. Kara went to her side to be ready to offer assistance if requested, but didn't directly lend a hand for support. A moored Sith did not look favorably upon help in front of others. Rika stepped up to the table opposite Caelan and tossed two Ajeel down atop the map. Caelan closed her eyes for a moment, then looked up into Rika's fierce blue eyes. What happened?
I don't know, Mother Confessor. I found their heads impaled on pikes. Their Ajeel were tied to the pikes.
Caelan held her anger in check.
Are you satisfied now, Rika?
Galena and Solvig died as Mord Sith would want to die.
Galena and Solvig died for nothing, Rika. After the first four, we knew it wouldn't work. With the Dreamwalker in their minds, the Gifted are not vulnerable to Mord Sith in the way that would otherwise be the case.
It could have been something else. If we can catch their Gifted where the Mord Sith can get at them, then we might be able to take them out. It's worth the risk. Their Gifted can cut down thousands of soldiers with a sweep of their hand.
I understand the wish, Rika. Wishing, however, does not make it possible. We have 6 dead Mord Sith to show us the reality of what is. We will not throw away the lives of any more because we refuse to recognize the truth of it.
I still think...
Those of us here have important things to decide. I don't have time for this.
Caelan put her fists on the table and leaned toward the woman.
I am the Mother Confessor and the wife to Lord Rahl. You will do as I say, or you will leave. Do you understand?
Rika's blue eyes shifted to Kara. Kara stood as expressive as a stone. Rika looked back at Caelan and let out a long sigh.
I wish to remain with our forces and do my duty.
Fine.
Now, go get yourself something to eat while you still have a chance. We need you to be strong.
For a Mord Sith, Rika's little nod was about as close to a salute as it came. After she was gone, Caelan swatted at the plague of mosquitoes and returned her attention to the map.
So, she said, removing the two Ajeel from the map, who has any suggestions?
I'd say we have to keep at their edges, Zed offered. Obviously, we can't be throwing ourselves in front of them. We can do nothing but to continue to fight them as we have been doing.
I agree, Verna said.
General Myford rubbed his chin as he stared down at the map spread out before them on the table.
What we have to worry about is his size.
Well, of course we have to worry about the size of the Order, Caelan said. They have enough men to split up and still be too huge to handle. That's what I'm talking about. What we're going to do when he splits. If I were him, that's what I'd do. He knows how it would complicate our lives.
There was an urgent knock. Warren, over by the window, not bothering to look at the map with the rest of them, opened the door. Captain Zimmer stepped in, giving a quick salute of his fist to his heart. Panting as he entered, he brought with him a swirling rush of warm air that smelled like a horse, ignoring the rest of them. Warren returned to his brooding at the window.
"He's splitting his force," Captain Zimmer announced,
as if their fear had given birth to the reality. Most in the room sighed unhappily with the news.
"Any direction yet?" Kalin asked.
Captain Zimmer nodded.
"From the looks of it, he's sending maybe a third, possibly a little more, up the Calisidran Valley toward Galia. The main force is heading to the northeast, probably to enter and go north up the Kern Valley."
They all knew the eventual goal. Zed made a fist.
"There's no joy in being right, but that's just what Kalin and I talked about. That was our guess."
General Myford was still rubbing his chin as he studied the map.
"It's an obvious move, but with the size of his force, the obvious is not a liability."
No one wanted to broach the issue, so Kalin settled the matter.
"Galia is on its own. We're not sending any troops to help them."
Captain Zimmer finally waggled a finger at the map.
"We need to put our forces in front of their main force to slow them down. If we stay on their heels instead, we will only be cleaning up the mess they make."
"I have to agree," the general shifted his weight to his other foot. "We have no choice but to try to slow them. We'll have to keep giving ground, but at least we can slow them. Otherwise they are going to move up through the center of the Midlands with the speed and power of a spring flood."
Zed was watching the young wizard off by himself at the window.
"Warren, what do you think?"
Warren looked up at the sound of his name, as if he hadn't been paying attention. Something about him didn't look well. He took a breath and straightened, his face brightening, making Kalin think she had been mistaken. Hands clasped behind his back, Warren strode to the table. He peered at the map from over Verna's shoulder.
"Forget Galia. It's a lost cause. We cannot help them. They will suffer the sentence imposed upon them by the Mother Confessor, not because she spoke the words, but because her words were simple truth. Any troops we send to help would be forfeit."
Zed cast a sidelong glance at his fellow wizard.
"What else?"
Warren finally moved closer to the table, wedging himself between Verna and the general. With authority, he firmly planted his finger on the map far to the north, almost three-quarters of the way to Adendril from where they were camped.
"You have to go there."
General Myford frowned.
"Up there? Why?"
"Because," Warren said, "you can't stop Jagang's army, his main force. You can only hope to slow them as they move north up into the Kern Valley. This is where you must make a stand, if you hope to delay them next winter. Once they move through you, they will be upon Adendril."
"Move through us?"
General Myford asked in a surly manner. Warren looked up at him.
"Well, do you suppose you are going to be able to stop them? It wouldn't surprise me if by then they have 3.5 to 4 million men."
The general let out an ill-tempered breath.
"Then why do you think we should be at that spot, right in their way?" "You can't stop them, but if you harry them sufficiently as they move north, you can keep them from reaching Adendril this year. At this spot, they will be running out of time before the weather closes in. With a bit of stiff resistance, you can grind them to a halt for the winter, buying Adendril one more season of freedom."
Warren looked up into Kalin's eyes.
"The following summer, a year from now, Adendril will fall. Prepare them for it in whatever way you are able, but make no mistake, the city will fall to the order."
Kalin's blood ran cold. To hear him say the words aloud staggered her. She wanted to slap him. To contemplate the Imperial Order taking their attack into the heart of the Midlands was horrifying. To accept as foreordained the Imperial Order seizing the heart of the New World was unthinkable. Kalin's mental image of Jagang and his bloodthirsty thugs strolling the halls of the Confessor's palace sickened her. Warren leaned around the general to look at Zed.
The Wizard's Keep must be protected. You know that better than I. It would be the end of all hope if their gifted were to gain the keep and the dangerous things of magic stored there. I think the time has come to keep that above all else in our thinking. Holding the keep is vital.
Zed smoothed back his unruly white hair.
I could hold the keep by myself, if I had to.
Warren looked away from Zed's hazel eyes.
You may have to, he said in a quiet voice. When we get to this place, he tapped the map again, then you can do no more with the army, Zed, and you must go to safeguard the Wizard's Keep and the things of magic kept there.
Kalin could feel the blood heating her face.
You're talking about this as if it's all settled, as if it has been decided by fate, and there is nothing we can do about it. We can't win if we hold such a defeatist attitude.
Warren smiled, his shy manner suddenly surfacing.
I'm sorry, Mother Confessor. I didn't mean to give you that impression. I'm only offering my analysis of the facts of the situation. We aren't going to be able to stop them. There's no use deluding ourselves about that. They grow larger by the day. We must also take into account that there are going to be lands such as Andorith and Galea which fear the Order and will join them rather than suffer the brutal fate of those who refuse to surrender. I lived in the old world as it fell bit by bit to the Imperial Order. I've studied Jagang's methods. I know the man's patience. He methodically conquered the entire old world when such a feat seemed inconceivable. He spent years building roads just to be able to accomplish his plans. He never wavers from his goal. There are times when you can anger or humiliate him into a rash action, but he quickly comes to his senses. He quickly comes to his senses because he has a cause that is paramount to him. You must understand something important about Jagang. It's the most important thing I can tell you about the man. He believes with all his heart that what he is doing is right. He revels in the glory of conquest and victory, to be sure. But his deepest pleasure is being the one who has brought what he sees as righteousness to those he views as heathens. He believes that mankind can only advance ethically if they are all brought under the moral authority of the Order. That's just nonsense, Kalin said. You may think so, but he truly believes he is serving the cause of the greater good for mankind. He believes piously in this. It is a sacred moral truth to him and his ilk.
He believes that murder, rape, and enslavement are just, General Myford asked. He would have to be out of his mind.
He was raised at the feet of priests of the Fellowship of Order.
Warren lifted a finger to make sure they all noted his point.
He believes that all those things and more are justified. He believes that only the next world matters, because then we will be in the eternal light of the Creator. The Order believes that you earn that reward in the next world by sacrificing for your fellow man in this world. All those who refuse to see this, that would be us, must either be brought to follow the Order's ways or die.
So, General Myford said, it's his sacred duty to crush us. It's not plunder he seeks primarily, but his bizarre version of the salvation of mankind.
Exactly.
All right, Kalin said with a sigh. So, what do you think this holy man of justice will do?
He basically has two choices, I believe. If he is to conquer the new world and bring all of mankind under the authority of the Order, he must take two important places, or he has not really succeeded. Adendril, because it is the seat of power in the Midlands, and the People's Palace in Dahara, because it reigns over the Daharan people. If those two fall, everything else will crumble. He could have gone for either. Emperor Jagang has now made his choice of which falls first. The Imperial Order is going for Adendril in order to split the Midlands. Why else would they go north? What better way to defeat an enemy than to cleave them in two. After they have Adendril, they will turn their swords to an isolated Dahara. What better way to demoralize an enemy than to first go for their heart? I am not saying that it is preordained, but merely telling you the way the Order goes about its grisly work. This is the same thing Richard has already figured out. Given that we can't realistically expect to stop them, I think it only wise to face the reality of what is, don't you?
Kaelin's gaze sank to the map.
I believe that in the darkest hours we must believe in ourselves. I do not intend to surrender the Daharan Empire to the Imperial Order. We need to wage the best war we can, until we can turn it around.
The Mother Confessor is right,
Zed insisted with quiet authority.
The last great war I fought in my youth seemed just as hopeless for a time. We prevailed, and drove the invaders back to the place from where they had come.
None of the Daharan officers said anything. It was Dahara that was that invader.
But things are different now. That was a war pressed by an evil leader.
Zed met the gaze of General Myford, Captain Zimmer, and the other Daharan officers.
Every side in a war has good people, just as they all have the bad. Richard, as the new Lord Rahl, has given those good people a chance to flourish. We must prevail in this. As difficult as it may now be to believe, there are good people in the old world, too, who would not wish to be under the boot heel of the Order, or to press a war for the Order's reasons. Nonetheless, we must stop them.
So, Kaelin said, gesturing at the map before Warren, how do you think Jagang will press the war?
Warren tapped the map again, to the south of Adendril.
Knowing Jagang, and the way he conquers his opponents, I think he will stick to his grand plan. He has a goal and will doggedly continue to move toward it. There is nothing we have shown him that he has not seen from other opponents for his whole life. With that experience, I am sure he finds this war unexceptional. I don't mean to discount our efforts. All war has its surprises, and we've given him some nasty ones. I would say, though, that it is going largely as he expected. It will take them the summer to advance to this place I've shown you. Given his usual pace and the fact that you will be harrying them, Jagang, in general, has always moved slowly, but with unstoppable force. He will simply pour in enough men to crush the opposition. He feels that if he takes time to get to his enemy, it only gives them more time to tremble in fear of him. When he finally arrives, his enemies are often ready to crumble from the agony of the wait. If you put your force there where I showed you, you will be able to protect Adendril next winter, as Jagang will be content to bide his time. He has learned what a hardship the winters are in the New World. He will not needlessly press a winter campaign, but in the summer, when they move again like they do now, then Adendril will fall, whether or not you stand against the weight of their main force. When they do move on Adendril, we must hold the Wizard's Keep. That is all we can do.
The room was silent. The fire was cold now. Warren and Verna had already packed their things and were ready to go, as was most of the rest of the army. Warren and Verna were losing their home. Kaelin glanced to the side, letting her gaze linger on the curtains she had long ago made for them. Their wedding seemed but a dim memory. Her own wedding seemed but a distant dream. Every time she woke, Richard seemed almost a ghost to her. Mind-numbing, relentless, never-ending war seemed the only reality. There were occasional fleeting moments when she thought that she might have only dreamed him, that he couldn't possibly have really existed, that their long-ago happy summer home in the mountains never happened. Those moments of doubt terrified her more than Jagang's army.
"Warren," Kaelin asked in a soft voice, "what then? What do you think will happen the following summer, after they have taken Adendril?"
Warren shrugged. "I don't know.
Maybe Jagang will be content to digest Adendril for a while, to establish firm control over the Midlands. He believes it is his duty to his Creator to bring all of mankind under the Order. Sooner or later, he will move on Dahara. Kaelin finally directed her attention to Captain Zimmer.
Captain, get your men ready.
While we're getting all our supplies and such on the way, you might as well go and remind Jagang that we have kept our blades sharp. The captain grinned and clapped his fist to his heart. Kaelin swept her gaze across everyone in the room.
I intend to make the Order shed blood for every inch they take. If that is all I can do, then I will do it until I breathe my last breath.
Chapter 53. The dead still air was sweltering and reeked of stagnant sewage. Richard wiped sweat from his brow. At least as long as his sturdy wagon was rolling through the streets, he could enjoy a little breeze. Distracted out of his concern over knowing Kaelin and Kara had to have long since left the safety of their mountain home, he noticed an unusual amount of activity for the middle of the night. Shadowy figures hurried down the dark streets to dart into dim buildings. Slashes of light briefly fell to the street until doors could be pulled shut. The moon was out, and in the darker alleys he thought he saw people watching him, waiting until he passed before they went on their way. Over the rumble of his wagon's wheels, he couldn't hear anything they might be saying. As he turned onto the road that would take him out to the charcoal maker, he had to pull his team up short as men with long pole weapons stepped out and blocked his way. A guard seized the horse's bits. Other of the city guards swept out of the side street to point lances up at him.
"What are you doing out here?"
one of the voices asked from the side of the wagon. Richard calmly yanked up on the lever to set the brake.
"I have a special pass to move goods at night. It's for the Emperor's Palace."
The words Emperor's Palace was usually enough to have him on his way. The guard waggled his fingers.
"If you have a special pass, then let's see it."
This night the guards wanted more. Richard pulled a folded piece of paper from a protective leather sleeve inside his shirt and held it down to the guard. Metal squeaked as the guard slid open a tiny door in his shielded lantern, letting a narrow slit of light fall across the paper. Several heads bent in to read the words and inspect the official seals. They were all genuine. They should be. They had cost Richard a small fortune.
"There you go."
The guard handed the paper back to Richard.
"Have you seen anything unusual as you have gone through the city?"
"Unusual? What do you mean?" The guard grunted.
"If you had seen anything, you wouldn't have to ask."
He waved his hand.
"On your way."
Richard made no effort to leave.
"Should I be worried?"
He made a show of looking around.
"Are there highwaymen about? Am I in danger? Is it safe for a citizen to be out? I'll take the wagon back if it's dangerous."
The man chuckled derisively.
"You've got nothing to be afraid of. It's just some foolish people making trouble because they've nothing better to do."
"That's all it is? Are you sure?"
"You have work to do for the palace. Get to it."
"Yes, sir."
Richard clicked his tongue and flicked the reins. The heavy wagon lurched ahead. He didn't know what was going on, but suspected the guards were out to catch some more insurgents for questioning. They probably wanted to get back to their post, so anyone they got their hands on was likely to end up being an insurgent. A man from Ishak's place had been arrested several days before. He had been drunk on homemade liquor and left a meeting early. He never made it home. A few days later, Ishak had received word that the man had confessed to crimes against the Order. The man's wife and daughter were arrested. The wife was released after receiving a specified number of lashes for confessing to speaking ill of the Order and having hateful thoughts about her neighbors. The daughter had not yet been released. No one even knew where she was being held. Eventually he reached the edge of the city where it gave way to open fields. Richard took a deep breath of the agreeable aroma of freshly turned earth. Lights from occasional farms glimmered like lonely stars. In the moonlight, Richard could finally see the rough skyline of forest. As he rolled into the charcoal maker's place, the charcoal maker, a nervous man named Favel,
scurried up to the side of the wagon.
"Richard Cipher, there you are. I was worried about you coming."
"Why?" The man let out a high-pitched titter. Pavel frequently giggled at things that weren't funny. Richard understood that it was just his way. He was a jumpy fellow, and his laugh was not meant as disrespect, but was rather something he couldn't help. A lot of people, though, avoided Pavel because of his strange laugh, fearing he might be crazy, a punishment, they believed, imposed on sinners by the Creator. Others got angry at him because they thought he was laughing at them. That only made Pavel more nervous, which made him laugh all the more. Pavel was missing his front teeth, and his nose was crooked from being broken a number of times. Richard knew the man couldn't really help it, and so never gave him trouble about it. Pavel had taken a liking to him.
I don't know. I just thought you might not come.
Pavel's big eyes blinked in the moonlight. Richard's face wrinkled in puzzlement.
Pavel? I said I was coming. Why would you think I might not?
Pavel's fingers worried at his earlobe.
No reason.
Richard climbed down. The city guards stopped me.
No.
Pavel's titter rippled out through the darkness.
What did they want? Did they ask you anything?
They wanted to know if I'd seen anything unusual.
But you didn't,
he giggled.
They let you go. You saw nothing.
Well, Richard drawled, I did see that fellow with the two heads. Crickets chirped in the silence. Pavel blinked in astonishment. In the moonlight, Rich could see his mouth hanging open.
You saw a man with two heads?
This time it was Richard who laughed. No, Pavel, I didn't. It was just a joke.
It was? But it wasn't funny.
Richard sighed. I suppose not. Have you got the load of charcoal ready? I've got a long night ahead of me. Victor needs a load of steel, and Prisca needs charcoal, or he said he would have to close down. He said you didn't send your last order. Pavel giggled.
I couldn't. I wanted to, Richard Cipher. I need the money. I owe the loggers for the trees I made into this charcoal. They told me they were going to quit bringing me wood if I didn't pay them.
Pavel lived at the edge of a forest, so his source of wood was handy, but he wasn't allowed to cut the wood. All resources belonged to the order. Trees were cut when the loggers who had permits needed work, not when someone needed wood. Most of the wood lay on the ground and rotted. Anyone caught picking up wood was liable to be arrested for stealing from the order. Pavel held his hands up as if to implore Richard's understanding.
I tried to get the charcoal transported to Prisca, but the committee denied me permission to transport it. They said I don't need the money. Don't need the money, can you imagine?
He laughed painfully.
They told me that I was a rich man, because I had a business, and that I had to wait while they saw to the needs of the common people first. I'm only trying to live.
I know, Pavel. I told Prisca that it wasn't your fault. He understands. He has troubles like that of his own. He's just desperate because he needs the charcoal. You know, Prisca, he gets hot at those who have nothing to do with the problem. I told him I would bring a load of charcoal tonight, and another two tomorrow night. Can I count on you for two more loads tomorrow? Richard held out the silver coins for the load of charcoal.
Pavel clapped his hands together prayerfully. Oh, thank you, Richard Cipher. You are a savior. Those loggers are a nasty lot. Yes, yes, and two tomorrow. I have them cooling now. You are as good as a son to me, Richard Cipher.
He motioned off into the darkness as he tittered.
They are there cooking. You will have them.
Richard could see the dozens and dozens of mounds like little haystacks that were the earthen ovens. Small pieces of split wood were tightly stacked around in a circle, with tinder stuffed in the center, building them up into a rounded pile which was then covered over with fern leaves and broom and then plastered over with firm earth. Fire was put in at the bottom. Then that opening was closed over. Moisture and smoke escaped from small vents in the top for 6 to 8 days. When the smoke ceased, the vents were sealed to kill the fire. After it cooled, the earthen ovens could be opened and the charcoal removed. It was a labor-intensive occupation, but rather simple work.
Let me help you load your wagon,
Bobble said. Richard caught the man's shirt at his shoulder as he started away.
Bobble, what's going on?
Bobble put a finger to his lower lip as he laughed. It almost sounded like it was painful for him to laugh. He hesitated, but finally whispered his answer.
The revolt. It has started.
Richard had suspected as much. What do you know about it, Favel?
Nothing. I know nothing.
Favel, it's me, Richard. I'm not going to turn you in. Favel laughed. This time it sounded more like relief.
Of course not. Of course not. Forgive me, Richard Cipher. I get so nervous. I wasn't thinking.
So what about this revolt? Favel turned up his hands in a helpless gesture.
The Order. They strangle people. We can't live. If not for you, Richard Cipher, I would be... Well, I don't want to think about it. But others, they are not so fortunate. They starve. The Order takes the food they grow. People have loved ones who have been arrested. They confess to things they did not do. Did you know that, Richard Cipher? That they confess to things they did not do? I never believed it myself. I thought that if they confessed, then they were guilty. Why confess if you are innocent?
He giggled.
Why? I thought they were terrible people, wanting to hurt the Order. I thought it served them right, and I was glad they were arrested and punished.
So what changed your mind?
My brother!
Favel's chuckles suddenly were sobs.
He helped me make charcoal. We made it together. We supported our families making charcoal. We worked from sun up until sundown. We slept in the same house there. That one there. One room. We were together all the time. Last year, at a meeting where we all had to stand up and tell how the Order made our lives better, as we were leaving, they arrested him. Someone gave his name as maybe an insurgent. I was not worried. My brother was not guilty of anything. He makes charcoal.
Richard waited in the darkness, sweat trickling down his neck as Favel stared off into the dark visions.
For a week, I went every day to the barracks to tell them that he would not do anything against the Order. We loved the Order. The Order wishes all people to be fed and cared for. The guards said my brother finally confessed. High crimes, they called it, plotting to overthrow the Order. They said he confessed it to them. The next day, I was going to see more people, the officials at the barracks. I was so angry to tell them that they were cruel animals. My wife, she cried and begged me not to go back to the barracks yet again, for fear they would arrest me, too. For her sake and the children, I did not go. It would do no good anyway. They had my brother's confession. No one who confesses is innocent. Everyone knows that. They put my brother to death. His wife and children live with us still. We can hardly...
Favel giggled as he bit down on his knuckle. Richard put a hand on the man's shoulder. I understand, Favel. There was nothing you could have done. Favel wiped at his eyes.
Now, I'm guilty of thinking hateful thoughts. That is a crime, you know. I am guilty of it. I think about life without the Order. I dream of having a cart of my own, just a cart, and my sons and nephew could deliver the charcoal we make. Wouldn't that be wonderful, Richard Cipher? I could buy—
His voice trailed off. He looked up in confusion.
But the Order says such thoughts are a crime, because I am putting my wants before the needs of others. Why are their needs more important than mine? Why? I went to ask for a permit to buy a cart. They said I cannot have one, because it would put the cart drivers out of work. They said I was greedy for wanting to put people out of work. They called me selfish for having such thoughts.
That's wrong, Richard said in quiet assurance. Your thoughts are not a crime, nor are they evil. It's your life, Favel. You should be able to live it as you see fit. You should be able to buy your cart and work hard and make the best of your life for you and your family. Favel chortled.
You sound like a revolutionary, Richard Cipher.
Richard sighed, thinking about how useless the whole thing was. No, Favel. Favel appraised him in the moonlight for a time.
It has already started, Richard Cipher. The revolt. It has begun.
I have charcoal to deliver. Richard went around the back of the wagon and hoisted a basket up onto the wagon bed. Favel helped with the next basket.
You should join them, Richard Cipher. You are a smart man. They could use your help.
Why? Richard wondered if he dared get his hopes up. What do they have planned? What are they going to do with this revolt? Favel giggled.
Why, they are marching in the streets tomorrow. They are going to demand changes.
What changes?
Well, I think they want to be able to work. They are going to demand they be allowed to do what they want, he giggled. Maybe I can get a cart. Do you think, Richard Cipher, do you think that when they have this revolt, I can get a cart and deliver my charcoal? I could make more charcoal then.
But what do they plan to do? How are they going to change anything if the order says no, which they will?
Do? Why, I think they will be very angry if the order tells them no. They may not go back to their jobs. Some say they will break into the stores and take the bread.
Richard's hopes faded back into the shadows. The man clutched at Richard's sleeve.
What should I do, Richard Cipher? Should I join the revolt? Tell me.
Favel, you should not ask anyone else what you should do about something like this. How can you endanger your life, the lives of your family, and what a man with a wagon says?
But you are a smart man, Richard Cipher. I am not so smart as you.
Richard tapped his finger against the man's forehead. Favel, in here, in your head, you are smart enough to know what you must do. You have already told me why the order can never help people have better lives by telling them how they must live. You figure that out all on your own.
You, Favel the charcoal maker, are smarter than the order.
Favel beamed.
You think so, Richard Cipher? No one ever told me before that I was smart.
You're smart enough to decide for yourself how much it means to you and what you want to do about it.
I fear for my wife and my brother's wife, and all our children. I don't want the order, but I'm afraid for them if I'm arrested. How would they live?
Richard heaved another basket into the wagon. Favel, listen to me. Revolt is the kind of thing you must be sure of. It's dangerous business. If you are going to join a revolt, you have to be sure enough of what you want to do to be ready to lay down your life for your freedom.
Really? You think so, Richard Cipher?
The spark of hope was gone. Favel, you stay here and make charcoal. Prisca needs charcoal. The order will arrest those people, and then that will be the end of it. You're a good man. I don't want to see you arrested. Favel grinned.
All right, Richard Cipher. If you say so, I will stay here and make charcoal.
Good. I'll be back tomorrow night. But, Favel, if there is still trouble, I may not make it tomorrow night. If there is still marching going on and the streets and roads are blocked, I may not be able to make it out here.
I understand. You will be back as soon as you can. I trust you, Richard Cipher. You never let me down.
Richard smiled. Look, if they are having a revolt tomorrow and I can't make it out here right away, here's the money for the next load. He handed the man another silver mark. I don't want those loggers to stop getting wood for you. The foundries need charcoal. Favel giggled in genuine delight. He kissed the silver mark and slipped it down his boot.
The charcoal will be ready. Now, let me help you load your wagon.
Favel was only one of the charcoal makers with whom Richard dealt. He had a whole string of them he kept going, so the foundries could have charcoal. They were all humble people just trying to get along in life. They did the best they could under the yoke of the order. Richard made a little profit selling the charcoal to the foundries, but he made more selling iron and steel he bought from them. Charcoal was just a small sideline to help fill his nights, as long as he was out with his wagon. What he made from the charcoal covered the bribes, mostly. He made a good bit more, hauling the odd lot of ore, clay, lead, quicksilver, antimony, salt, molding powders, and a variety of other things the foundries needed, but couldn't get permits for, or get transported when they needed them. There was as much of that business as Richard could want. It paid for the care of his team with some profit left over. The iron and steel was pure profit. By the time he made it to the foundry with the load of charcoal, Prisca, the hulking foundry master, was pacing. His powerful hands grabbed the side of the wagon. He peered in. About time! I had to wait for an hour after I came from Fobble's while the city guards inspected the load. Prisca waved his beefy arms. Those bastards! It's all right. Calm down. They didn't take any. I have it all. The man sighed. I tell you, Richard, it's a wonder I've kept my furnaces going. Richard ventured a dangerous question. You're not involved with the trouble in the city, are you? In the light coming from his office window, really no more than a hut, Prisca appraised Richard for a time. Richard, change is coming. Change for the better. What change? A revolt has begun. Richard felt the spark of hope grow anew, but stronger this time, not so much for himself. His chains held him too tenaciously, but for the people who yearned to be free. Fobble was a kind man, a hard-working man, but he was not the clever man, the resourceful man that Prisca was. Prisca was a man who knew more than it would seem possible for him to know. Prisca had given Richard the names of all the officials who could be bribed for papers and advised him how much to offer. A revolt? Richard asked. A revolt for what? For us. For the people who want to be able to live our lives as we wish. The new beginning is starting tonight. In fact, it has already begun. He turned to his building and pulled open the doors. When you get to Victor's, you must wait for him, Richard. He must speak with you. About what? Prisca waved dismissively. Come, give me my charcoal, and then load your steel. Victor will bite my head off if I keep you. Richard pulled the first basket out of the wagon and carried it to the side, where Prisca added another. What have these people who started the revolt done? What are their plans? Prisca leaned close as Richard dragged another basket to the rear of the wagon. They have captured a number of officials of the order, high officials. Have they killed them yet?
Killed them? Are you crazy? They aren't going to harm them. They will be held until they agree to loosen the rules, satisfy the demands of the people.
Richard gaped at the man. Loosen the rules? What are they demanding?
Things must change. People want to be allowed more say in their businesses, their lives, their work.
He lifted a basket of charcoal.
Less meetings. They are demanding to have their needs taken more into consideration.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 16.